This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscowane. Well, the voters have spoken. Jim Kenney has been chosen as the Democratic nominee for mayor of Philadelphia, coming in ahead of Anthony Hardy Williams, Lynn Abraham, Nelson Diaz, Milton Street, and Doug Oliver. This hour, we talk about Kenney's nomination, what this means quite possibly for the city's future, and we'll take a look at the races for city council and for state Supreme Court as well. Joining us this hour, WHYY's own Katie Culinary. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you, Mary.
Damon C. Williams is political reporter for the Philadelphia Tribune. Good to have you here, Damon.
Glad to be here.
And Tom Farrick has been writing for Philly.com's Next Mayor Project. Hi,
Hello.
Tom.
Hello.
So, Jim Kenney, the Democratic nominee for mayor, and here he is last night after the results came in.
Our campaign was a broad and unprecedented coalition of diverse groups, many of whom came together for the first time to support me. Environmentalists, feminists, teachers, working families, first responders, unions, public school parents, clergy, the LGBT community, and immigrants. I am honored and forever humble by the coalition of support that made me the Democratic nominee for mayor of the city of Philadelphia.
Jim Kenney winning close to 56% of the vote. And as you heard, people from all walks of life came together. He drew a lot of support from African Americans in the city. Any surprises here in Kenney's win? Katie, let's go to you first.
Sure. Well, I think the biggest surprise really was just how wide a margin it was that he won by. I mean, he'd been leading, kind of surging ahead in the polls. The first and only independent poll came out last week, showing him, I think, up by about 27 points. Is that right, Tom?
Yeah.
He just, you know, kind of kept going on that momentum. And I think, you know, even a few days before last night, you know, the campaign had kind of indicated that it, you know, would still be, you know, slightly closer. But really, I think what was so shocking to all of us here last night who were working this was just how early the results came in, how early it was clear that Kenney was the winner, got the nomination, and just how wide a margin it was.
Damon, you're nodding your head.
Yes, it was quite decisive. We didn't think that the margin would be as wide either. But as I was covering the Williams campaign over at his headquarters last night, and when the numbers came in, they immediately looked grim. And once it got up to around the 5, 10, 15% of the votes being counted, it seemed that Williams, the lead was just insurmountable. And that actually changed the tenor and tone in his campaign headquarters. But no one expected the margin to be that wide.
Did he expect to lose, do you think?
Williams?
Yes.
I think that as of late last week, early last week, it became a distinct possibility for him. He had to consider it. The polls don't lie as much as people would want to assume that they do. The numbers are the numbers. I think that influenced his decision to come out so loudly and strongly against Ramsey. And I think it had a counter effect that drew even more disaffected voters away from him.
So Anthony Hardy Williams at one point had said he would not have Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey on his staff were he to be elected mayor. Did that turn the tide, in your opinion, Tom Farrick?
Well, the tide was turning, and I think what happened was is that Tony began with a certain assumption, and the assumption was, and it was an appropriate one, that he'd get at least 60% of the black vote and possibly more, because history tells us that black candidates running for mayor can get 83% of the African-American vote in an election with a multi-candidate group with white candidates included. And that clearly wasn't going to happen. And I think he was trying to reach back out and grab that base back. And he just used a really unfortunate tactic to do that. That was like a Hail Mary pass, as they say in football. We all have to use sports metaphors when we cover politics. But that was like, going after who arguably and demonstrably the most popular public official in Philadelphia, right, with a 78% approval rating, mm-hmm, in the poll that we did. And no, everyone was – and it was also the kind of thing where everybody was baffled by it. Like, what is he doing? It looks dumb.
And I think the other thing that was really interesting was that Kenney and all the other candidates, you know, kind of just took the high road. Nobody else went negative the way that the Williams campaign went negative. And I think in a strange way, if I was on Williams campaign staff, I'd probably be sitting back on, come on, guys, aren't you guys going to counterattack here? You know, what's
Mix
going on here? Yeah. And it just never happened. Mm-hmm. So that was another kind of interesting twist sort of in the last few weeks.
So safe to say across the board, voters in Philadelphia did not vote along racial lines this election?
Absolutely did not. When the ward results came in from North Philly sectors, from certain sectors in South Philly, and especially in West Philadelphia, when it was turning that Kenny had won those wards, it was no way for Williams to come back from that. And those wards are predominantly African-American, littered with the issues that all the candidates talk about, the stop and frisk, the education, economy. This vote, particularly by the minority voters, really sends a clear and distinct message, not only to the mayor, but to all of the really the leadership of Philadelphia, the African-American leadership of Philadelphia.
So do you see this as the beginning to the end of voting along racial lines in the city of Philadelphia?
Could be, and I hope so, but could be.
Well, I think the thing is that, I mean, you're right in the sense that it is sending a message that you're not going to get our vote simply because you're African-American. You're going to have to earn that vote, and there's going to be not that race is not going to be the card or the determining factor in a case if I've got a credible alternative. I also think that it shows a difference in class. I think there's a difference, although Kenny ended up winning some of the poorest wards in the city, right. Very early on, his significant move and one that probably helped win was getting the support in the Northwest. Hmm. And that is a middle class, predominantly black area.
Before we get to the issues, let's take a quick look at the ballot for November 3rd. There is a Republican candidate, Melissa Murray Bailey. Who is she?
And why is she doing this?
Well, that sacrificial lamb, somebody had to do it, correct? No, seriously.
Katie knows. She talked to her.
Oh, I have not talked to her very much. I've seen her at a couple of forums. What I do know about her is that she switched her party affiliation. I believe for some time she was registered as a Democrat. She's a businesswoman who has not lived in the city for very long, at least compared to some of the other candidates on the Democratic side or some of the independents who were sort of weighing getting into this race. But she's a mom of a school-age child. She has a daughter, and she said that was really what prompted her to get into this race. She was talking to some friends, I believe, and, you know, was kind of frustrated at how things just never change. And she thought, well, why not run for mayor and change things myself? And I mean, the question that she's been asked many times, I think, in the press is, you know, why? You've never run for elected office before. Why are you doing this? And she seems to kind of have this almost, you know, sort of wide-eyed, well, you know, if I want to change things, this is what I have to do. And interestingly enough, at just in a couple of hours, Jim Kenney and Melissa Murray Bailey are going to be appearing together at a fundraiser for the Broad Street Ministry in Center City. A post-primary tradition is that all the winners and losers sort of gather together across the street at the Palm Restaurant. Mm-hmm. Not sure if that's going on this morning. Haven't had a chance to get over there, but just across the street, they'll be together at the Broad Street Ministry. And Kenny spoke very highly of her last night to the press and sort of the gaggle afterwards, said he wanted to, you know, give Melissa her respect as the other candidate. But it's just interesting that the next day they're going to be already appearing together, sort of not quite in solidarity. I'm not quite sure what it's going to be, but
sure.
We'll be reporting on that later.
I'd read that she had very little in her campaign war chest, several thousand dollars, so there's very little support from the party.
She could be a very attractive candidate if she had $2.5 million to spend in the general election.
Yeah.
Instead, she'll have about $25,000. So you can't make your case without having that, you know, magnifying your voice through the media. It's just not going to happen. And given the 8-1 voter registration split between Republicans and Democrats, it's a lost cause.
And the wild card here, possibly Bill Green.
Right.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah.
He's making noises, though. He hasn't ruled it out that he might jump in.
No. He is making noises about potentially running as an independent candidate, and people have taken him at his word. I mean, he seems to be talking about opposing Jim Kenney.
Would he be any sort of threat?
I don't think so, especially with the way the school funding situation in the SRC has went in a very public spat that he had with the governor and the Pennsylvania Department of Education. He may very well mount that campaign, but I don't think it'll be very effective. At that point, if he did announce Kenny would have solidified his base even further, have the full support of the city committee, and it would probably be a landslide. Kenny would be able to hold up the SRC as an important measuring stick.
Okay. Let's get to some of the issues. What do you think is the single most pressing issue facing the next mayor of Philadelphia?
There are none. I think that was
okay, the- Tom, we're done.
all of them.
All of them, I mean.
End of show.
Now, well, no, I mean, this race wasn't about, I mean, ostensibly it was about education, and that is what polled, and that's not a surprise looking at the financial stress of the district. The irony always is that the mayor has very little to do with running the school district. There weren't, I mean, crime is down, jobs are up. This was what I would call a continuity election, not a change election. It was somewhat curious because no one ever mentioned the name of Mayor Nutter, who was the incumbent and is very popular himself.
Sure.
So they didn't have a really strong issue that defined it. Now, the challenges facing the mayor are the same ones facing any mayor, and we're going to talk about them running city government for a change as opposed to running the schools. Have a city where the demand for services is great, and the resources to handle that are small.
Sure. Well, where does he stand on the School Reform Commission, Jim Kenny?
Well, we spoke with him during the editorial board meeting. He was resigned to the fact that the School Reform Commission would have to exist in some form or function. He wanted to have to weigh it more towards Philadelphia as far as the makeup of the board itself. But he was resigned to the fact that if we wanted the state's help, that the state is going to at least have to have a chair at the table. How much of a say on that board would be left up to his discretion. But he is resigned to the School Reform Commission existing, as it were.
Because in taking a look at the ballot questions regarding amending the city charter, apparently one was approved which would abolish the School Reform Commission, if I'm reading.
Well, I would call that a referendum rather than because the – the School Reform Commission is an instrument of the state,
yes,
created by the state, and can only – well, the SRC members can dissolve themselves, but really the state has to step in and do it. Even a mayor, if they wanted to get rid of it tomorrow, couldn't do it without the approval of the legislature and the governor.
Okay. Philadelphia's pension system underfunded by over $5.5 billion. Has Kenny made any indication as to how he might handle that? Should he win in the general election?
When that question is posed to them, we usually get the reaction you just got now.
Right.
Shifty eyes.
Very fuzzy.
Well, it sure is cool out today, isn't it? No one has stepped forward with a plan and articulated a plan during this campaign about that.
Okay.
The only one that I can say, though, is Doug Oliver, who had wished we had sold PGW.
Okay, and we'll get to some of the other candidates after the break here. We're talking about the Pennsylvania primary. Jim Kenny, of course, won the Democratic mayoral primary in Philadelphia. If you'd like to jump into the conversation, give us a call, 888-477-9499, or a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Back in just a bit. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. The Pennsylvania primary is our subject this hour, and our guests include Tom Ferrick, who's been writing for Philly.com's Next Mayor Project. Damon C. Williams is political reporter for the Philadelphia Tribune, and Katie Colinari has been covering the primary races for us here at WHYY. Lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. Our email address is radiotimes@whyy.org. And we'll take tweets as well at WHYY Radio Times. So while we were off air here for a moment or so, we were talking about stop and frisk. Mm-hmm. And this is a policy that Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey supports, apparently. And how does Jim Kenny feel about this?
Well, Jim Kenny is the majority of the mayoral candidates have said that they would end that plan. They found it to be a targeted or racial profiling program. All of the candidates said that they would be against that. Williams decided for some reason or another to double down on that and come out and say, not only am I against stop and frisk, I'm also against the architect, as it were, of the program. I just wanted to note that it was unnecessary for Williams to do that because those voters weren't voting twice. So the people that were already convinced of his policing plan, of his initiative, they were already in favor of him. So that's where I think that goes. But all of the candidates told me at least that they would end stop and frisk.
And that was sort of a prominent theme of Kenny's victory speech last night. We heard the clip earlier at the start of the hour where he talked about, you know, issues of education, poverty. And he mentioned several times after that what he called the strained relationships between the community and the police. When reporters spoke to him afterwards, an interesting question was asked because Kenny sort of brought together this kind of diverse coalition of people, black and white, young and old, the police union, as well as people who, you know, might question the actions of police in the city of Philadelphia. Does this mean that the city, you know, appears to be changing maybe in a way? Because another thing to note is that this campaign was occurring at the same time as, you know, we were dealing with issues with the protests in Ferguson and protests in Baltimore. And that really kind of became a theme of the campaign, but not in a way that any of the candidates really sort of latched onto it in an effective way. As you mentioned, Damon, the only person who latched onto it in an ineffective way was indeed Tony Williams, because he came out against Commissioner Ramsey, who's one of the most popular public officials in Philadelphia right now. And so, again, going back to the question that Kenny was asked about, is the city changing maybe in a way that these other cities around the country are not? He sort of danced around it and didn't quite, you know, but did say that, you know, he believes that Philadelphia can kind of appeal to its better nature, and that his ability to sort of unite these different groups could help the city overcome some of its big challenges.
So, Tom Farrick, so there's nothing very clear then from Jim Kenney on how to reconcile the community with policing?
Wow, this is a complicated issue. No, he hasn't been specific other than to say that they're against stop and frisk. And we were talking during the break how a lot of the issues in this race ended up being chewed to death, gummed to death by the candidates, and they all ended up sounding like each other and saying, I'm in favor of education, too. I'm in favor of education, educating all kids, which avoids the whole public versus charter fight. They were all against stop and frisk. They think it's time to end it. I'll tell you a couple of people who aren't in favor of ending stop and frisk. One of them is Mayor Nutter, and the other one's Ramsey, and the other one are the people who believe that data-driven policing and preventive that this is an important tool in preventive crime. And the thing about it is that they have the numbers on their side if they want to attribute that, because we've had a decrease in crime and a decrease in violent crime. And
so there's a direct link between stop and frisk.
They believe there is.
Crime.
They believe there is. They believe there is. They believe it's all part of data-driven preventive policing. And you know, not much is heard about that, but there is, and it's the broken windows theory that goes back 15 years,
sure.
And this is an extension of it.
Right, and none of the mayoral candidates came out strongly against that. You know, no one described it as clearly as you just did, that was sort of the hallmark of Mayor Nutter's past 8 years. Mm. And no candidate stepped forward and said, well, I want to be the one to change that. As you mentioned, all these issues kind of got muddled. They participated in dozens of forums. I think I saw
70.
I saw somebody from the Diaz campaign tweet out last night. I think that it was like 75 or 80 forums. Mm. And perhaps in some ways that made them afraid to sort of allow for some thoughtfulness or some nuance, out of fear that, you know, if they said one thing at one forum and maybe changed their mind and said something else at another forum, that they would be, you know, sort of caught in an awkward moment.
So John Dougherty is head of the Electrical Workers Union, and he was a huge supporter of Jim Kenney. So what is Dougherty's role moving forward? How deep will his influence be? Damon?
We can't assume that he won't have any influence. When we spoke with Jim Kenney, he grew adamant talking about he was his own man and separating himself from his donations and campaign supports from Dougherty.
There was a lot of union money flowing into Kenney's campaign.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he became red-faced in saying that he has been his own man through his 20-plus years on council. He's done his own thing. There's been decisions he's made that is going against perhaps his brother's wishes or the wishes of the unions, et cetera. He pointed out with the convention center, the issues had near, and he was opposite his brother there. He made the case that he's his own man and his record backs it up. But to think that that Doherty won't have at least influence. I won't say he'll have say-so, but I think Kenny will listen to him.
Damon, you mentioned, you said the words red-faced. Kenny has a reputation for being a little tempestuous. Katie Culinary?
Yes, that's right. We had a great piece on our last election special by our producer, Shai Ben-Yakov, who had a great anecdote in there about Jim Kenny apparently throwing a cell phone or a beeper at the wall, and it became lodged in the wall. But the thing that was interesting
about— Is that the old Jim Kenny or the new Jim Kenny?
Oh, right, right. Good question. Good question. Apparently it's the old Jim Kenny, because one of the interesting things about this campaign was that he somehow managed to control that sort of infamous temper and not to say sort of outlandish things on Twitter as he has been wont to do in the past. So I think it speaks to actually his campaign staff that he inherited from former city solicitor Ken Trujillo, who dropped out of the race shortly after Kenny indicated that he was going to get in for personal family reasons. And inheriting that campaign staff was probably one of the best things that ever happened to Kenny, because they seemed to really run an effective campaign for him that kind of really push that new Kenny, that sort of controlled but still very personable Kenny, forward.
We have an email from Gary who asks, any chance Jim Kenny may incorporate some of the ideas the other primary opponents offered to solve some of the beleaguered issues of the city? And we kind of addressed that.
Well, he talked of forming a coalition. He talked early on very confident that he had the people and the know-how to rapidly form coalitions. And he said that he would need State Senator Williams in the State Senate to move part of his agenda and the agenda of the city along. So the relationships that he has already built in council and the business relationships as well, I think the coalitions, he wouldn't have too much of a problem building them.
Tom Ferrick?
I think if you wanted to be negative, and I'd love to be negative, I think if you wanted to be negative or be truthful, Jim's problem is that he has a coalition that is a series of expensive dates, for want of a better word, because he's got all the unions behind him. Mm. What does John Doherty want? Well, John's a very colorful figure, but John wants what any trade union person in Philly wants. They want to maintain their monopoly over construction jobs in the city. That's sure. Very clear. What do the teachers want? The teachers want the world to go away. They don't like the charters. The teachers want a pay increase. They don't want to have a contract that they don't like. What do the city employees want? The city employees want more money. They feel that they were there's pent-up demand for money and raises and decent benefits. All of these are very legitimate. They're legitimate issues on their part. But all of them have put their hope and trust in Jim Kenny in resolving them.
Let's take a quick look at some of the candidates who didn't really come even close to Jim Kenny. Lynn Abraham.
Right. I mean, she was the one who I think she was the first to get into this race sometime last year.
Former Philadelphia DA.
Right. Former Philadelphia district attorney. She was the longest serving district attorney in Philadelphia, sort of for 19 years, had kind of a, you know, not a whiff of scandal during her time. I mean, certainly collected a lot of baggage during that time. She was criticized on the campaign for not taking her sort of tough cookie, tough on crime stance on corrupt members of the Philadelphia Police Department and on corrupt politicians. But, you know, had the wide name recognition going into this race that the other candidates, even Jim Kenny, even State Senator Tony Williams, just did not. But I think what we saw over the course of her campaign was, you know, her campaign staff was constantly switching in and out. Not sort of a coherent, effective message. And then unfortunately, you know, I do think, you know, for her, age may have played a factor. You know,
well, especially with the fainting spell right at the beginning. Did that hurt her?
Right. I mean, I think it's hard to say whether it did or didn't, just because she was already kind of coming. She was already trailing behind at that point.
Okay.
But, you know, it definitely didn't help.
Perception.
I don't think. Right. It is perception. It's perception that, you know, a lot of her friends and longtime supporters say she definitely didn't deserve. And personally, I don't think she deserved it, just because, I mean, if you saw her the next day, she was, you know,
up and out.
Out there, you know. But again, maybe that's, you know, a failure of her campaign staff. She said she hadn't eaten much that day. And, you know, what kind of campaign staff doesn't make you prepared, you know, for anything for your first televised debate?
Damon Williams, what about Nelson Diaz? Many believe that he has the political chops to be mayor. What happened there?
The votes just weren't there. You know, and you speak about the emotional Jim Kenny. Diaz is just as emotional. The whole situation with the fractured fractured of the Latino vote, and him taking that so very personal and spending a week, maybe two, of his campaign just going back and forth over the validity of certain endorsements and just personifying it so much. I think that's where his campaign muddled down.
Too much inside baseball.
But yeah, it was just too much. And the readers, the voters weren't concerned about more so who's endorsing what or a fractured vote. They wanted to know, what are you going to do for our children and for our economy? And I think that's what hurt him the most.
And Doug Oliver Young, formerly Mayor Nutter's press secretary, he's, let's face it, it's politics. He's good looking. Mm-hmm. I mean, is he going to be back, Tom Barrack?
Well, I'm sure he'd like to be. I hope next time he brings some more money to the game.
That's right. Yeah.
Because he ended up, I think, raising and spending about $50,000, which is a paltry amount. You're really tough to get your message out with that. But he was sort of the Wizard of Oz of the campaign. He cast a large shadow. But when you look behind it over real support and real money and things like it, it was the little man behind the curtain,
right.
You know, moving the dials. But I have to say, he did a good job of it. I mean, mm-hmm. I think he got uniformly good reviews at all the forums. The problem with forums is that even if there's 70 of them, and even if 200 people go, you've got 14,000 people. So that's right. your total audience. So that was difficult for him to do it. Milton had a chance at one point.
Well,
that was 1967, I think.
He did really well in 2011, though, against Mayor Nutter, a quarter of the vote.
He did, and I think that was an anger vote. That was a protest vote against Nutter. And as I said at the time, voting for Milton Street because you don't like Michael Nutter and you're angry at him, it's like setting yourself on fire because you're angry with your wife. It doesn't make any sense. Didn't make sense. And he faded at the end, I must say. Although I think he may have won one or two wards in North Philly.
See, he's in his mid-70s. You think he'll be back at all in some way, shape, or form?
He'll be around.
It's Milton Street.
You can never count Milton out of anything.
He may run for office in New Jersey, which is where he lives.
You know, so.
Let's take a look at the city council races. The second district, Kenyatta Johnson did beat Ori Fibush. Was that expected, Damon Williams? It was a tight race, wasn't it?
The perception was that it was a tight race, and that was due to a slick media campaign.
Fibush.
Right. But the voters in that district, in the second district, unanimous, they spoke. Almost a 2-1 margin. Ori, the day before, was sending out on social media that the last time Kenyatta Johnson ran, he won by 38 votes. And Ori couched it in a way like, come on, guys, we can do this. We can do this. If that's what separated him the last time, imagine with all the disaffectedness going on, the gap could be even smaller. Instead, it was into the thousands. So that just shows that in that district, at least, the voters and the residents there are backing Kenyatta's plans.
So what does this mean, Damon, then, for the second district, that Kenyatta is still there?
It validified what Johnson is doing. If the race would have been closer, then you could question it, because Ori is a guy who doesn't have any political background or anything like that. So
he's a developer.
Yeah. So pundits, we would look and say, well, wow, this guy Johnson is really vulnerable. But the overwhelming vote count in Johnson's favor shows that his plans there, at least in the second district, are working.
Was anybody here surprised that Wilson Good Jr. was lost in his bid to remain in his council seat?
Yes.
Tom Farrick.
Well, I mean, I can't explain it other than Wilson never campaigns.
He's been there 15 years.
I know. He's been there 15 years. Has $1 million worth of name ID. But he rarely spends money on his campaign and rarely actually goes out and campaigns. You just don't see him. And this time we had a very good active field of candidates, Alan Dom, Helen Gim. I mean, there were real people out there working hard. And I think they got credit for working hard. And I think that was – and Wilson didn't. And Frank Rizzo Jr. didn't either. I don't think he campaigned at all either.
Barely,
So in order to win an election, as a rule of thumb, you should campaign.
In a practical way, though, was his low position on the ballot, did that hurt him? No.
I don't think so.
Tom, you're shaking your head.
No, I don't think so. I think if you wanted to find him, you could have a ballot position is always, you know, if you're first, that's really a pretty good, especially like for Common Pleas Court when you've got 43 candidates.
Right.
Sure.
But they could have found his name.
I was shocked by the turnout for Wilson, especially for the his economic advancement that he's made. I followed his bills that he's introduced and thus had passed, minority business, women business initiatives, and being chair of so many important, crucial committees on council. It's just befuddling to me that he's not back. But as Tom said, you can't just lie back on your laurels. We've seen that with candidates that had name recognition before that ran for council, and you heard nothing from them, and thus they weren't elected.
And Ed Nielsen suffered the same fate.
He was generally a newcomer to council, a special election to fill a seat. Nice enough guy, but the voters may don't know enough about him and wanted to give some of the fresh candidates that Tom mentioned a chance.
Oh, and one more thing, back to Wilson Good Jr. How much did the money of Alan Dome hurt? Because he poured a lot of money into the campaign, I read.
Right. And not only was it that he, put about $500,000 of his own money into the campaign and, TV ads, but just to kind of get into the underworld of Philadelphia politics here, he also bought a lot of support. We're told that he bought a lot of the ward leaders, who are kind of the feudal barons of Philadelphia politics, who can really turn out support for you. And that seemed to really work in Dom's favor, to the chagrin of other candidates who didn't quite have that amount of money to throw around to buy ward leaders and to buy that kind of support, who ended up trailing behind.
We only have a couple seconds here before we go to the
break.
Make
it clear that he didn't bribe them. He gave them street money.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, we're talking about the Philadelphia primary here. We're up against a break, but we'll have more in just a moment on WHYY. Tom Ferrick with Philly.com, Damon C. Williams with the Philadelphia Tribune, and our own WHYY's Katie Colinari. The number to call is 888-477-9499 if you'd like to join the conversation, or send us an email if you like, radiotimes@whyy.org. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscowane. The Pennsylvania primary is our subject, and our guests include Damon C. Williams, political reporter for the Philadelphia Tribune, WHYY's Katie Colinari, who's been covering the primary for us, and Tom Ferrick, who's been writing for Philly.com's Next Mayor Project. Lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. Our email address is radiotimes@whyy.org, and we take tweets as well at WHYY Radio Times. So continuing with our look at Philadelphia City Council in the 7th District, Maria Quinonez-Sanchez did get by with 54% of the vote. She is still not backed by the party. Why is that, Katie Colinari? Any ideas, thoughts?
Well, Tom, I don't know if you want to sort of jump in if you've been covering her a little bit longer than I have.
I think her IQ is too high. I think that's their problem. She's very effective. She's probably one of the best council members out there. She always comes up with good ideas, but she also is a political mover. She wants to create a machine and an organization centered in her community, in her district. And when she does that, she's going to butt heads with the existing powers. And as long as that is occurring, if there's no separate peace, then she's always going to face someone. Now, luckily for her, she faced Manny Morales, who turned out to be a flawed candidate. The guy with the Facebook, the sort of Cro-Magnon Facebook postings and things like that. And she ended up being endorsed, which is very unusual, by every living former mayor of Philadelphia who went up and endorsed her one day. So she had a lot going for her, but it's an internal thing in the community.
Would you call 54% a mandate, though? I mean, Morales must have come up with something.
Well, I'll tell you a couple things. Turnout was low yesterday. In fact, it was very low.
There across were the board.
230,000 votes cast, and that will be the lowest of any modern election, any modern primary.
Really? Yeah. What is that? What percentage is that?
That's about 28% of the total electorate. But I'll tell you that in 2007, when Michael Nutter was elected and there was a contested one, they had 299. In 1999, when John Street won, they had 299. So now we're down to 230. That's a significant drop. And in the Latino community, although I hesitate to say this because I've said it before based on numbers and everybody says I'm anti-Latino, the turnout is traditionally very low. So you have like a stronger organized vote, for want of a better word, in that community, and ward vote and committee person influence vote than you would, say, somewhere else. So that may have been a problem.
Why is it low? Is there a language issue? Language barrier?
No, I don't think there's a language barrier. It's all ethnic groups always go through a period where they're basically politically disenfranchised, where politics don't speak to them and they don't vote. And then eventually that changes over time. And I think the Latino community is new in that sense in terms of the numbers. And I think over time that'll change.
Damon Williams, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, yes, because I asked Councilwoman Sanchez that exact very question about the fractured vote and about not having the committee's endorsement. And she struck a very fierce independent tone. This was the third election now where she hasn't had the support. And given the success of our first two campaigns, she took it in stride. We've talked about the turnout, the low voter turnout in the Latino community, but that is still an issue for Quinones and for the voters and the ward leaders there. We talked earlier about Kenny building a coalition, but on a district level, I think Sanchez definitely has to build that coalition, may have to spend the rest of the year and next year doing that.
Okay. Let's get back to some of the issues here. Philadelphia Gas Works. Business leaders see the city as an energy hub, say privatizing PGW is essential. We know the story. Mayor Nutter's efforts to sell PGW were stymied. Does this come back I hesitate to use the word haunt the next mayor, but what happens to PGW?
I think it'll come up again. Council's already holding hearings, as it were, on ways to more efficiently work with the gas company and to bring all of those things that it wanted to bring with the proposed sale to UIL, which itself has been sold now to another company. We will see that, because the politicians will see that is a way that can at least help bridge our pension system more quickly than any other option. So it won't go away. And I think depending on what council comes up with, we might have another proposal to sell PGW.
And PGW could be sort of an interesting kind of test to see, you know, what kind of relationship Jim Kenney will have with city council. I had a chance to talk with Council President Daryl Clark last night, who was at Jim Kenney's headquarters celebrating and, you know, it came out and endorsed him last week. And I asked him, you know, so is this a new day? Because, you know, Clark and Mayor Nutter had a big fight this past year over PGW.
Sure.
Nutter wanted to sell, and Clark was adamant against it and, you know, kind of kept council members from any – nobody put up a bill to kind of even introduce the, you know, idea of this deal to sell it to UIL. So I asked him, you know, is this a new day? And he said, well, you know, Jim Kenney only recently left us on city council, so his memory is pretty recent. And I thought that was an interesting response.
If Kenney does become mayor of Philadelphia, do you see the honeymoon continuing with Daryl Clark?
It's a good question, and I'm not really sure that I can answer it because –
Tom Farrick, what's your sense?
Well, I think it can't get worse than the current relationship. So that's one thing. And Jim does come from council, and I think he understands council. We really have a power struggle, though, here between the strong executive and a, you know, what's supposed to be a weak council under the charter. And Jim's going to have to deal with that trend, for want of a better word, regardless of who heads it. And one of the things is that, you know, Daryl has shown that he has the ability to get the votes he needs to do what he wants to do. Often, unfortunately, that's blocking things like the PGW sale. But Jim didn't get up and offer a bill. None of the Republicans got up and offered a bill. They are the opposition. And so I think that Daryl enters this equation with a pretty strong hand. Now, he's got new members who may not be as controllable as some of the others, but I still think he has the upper hand.
Okay, let's get to the telephones. Bilal in Chester County is joining us now on Radio Times. Welcome, Bilal.
Yes, good morning to everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Taken collectively, the losses of Wilton Good, Ben Abraham, Frank Rizzo, are the voters in Philadelphia saying goodbye finally to the old guard, political guard in Philadelphia?
Oh, that's a good question. Damon Williams.
To some, but with that, you have to know that a member of that old guard, as it were, Jim Kenney, won the nomination. So, and then we will still have some familiar faces in familiar departments. It does send a signal, but not an all-out you know, eradication of the old guard. But this should be a signal to all of the other veteran council members.
Right. And I think if you look at, you know, maybe what happened in the second district in that race between Ori Fibush and Kenyatta Johnson, Kenyatta always had the edge because he was a state representative. He was a freshman councilman. So people in that district were used to voting for him. And, you know, he sort of had the backing of the people who, you know, sort of the older voters that tend, the people that do tend to get out and vote. But he really was an establishment candidate. And Ori Fibush was there kind of, you know, to sort of upend the establishment. And I think the fact that he won so handily, you know, again, kind of shows you it really was kind of a mixed bag. There were a few warning shots fired, but, you know, at the end of the day, you still have this mix of sort of old and new guard.
Okay, we've got a question from Jen. No one has mentioned Kenny's relationship with Vince Fumo. Can they discuss this, Tom Farrick?
I haven't talked to Vince. There's no doubt that Jim was a protege of Vince Fumo. There's no doubt that he was an aide-de-camp to him and an ally for a long time.
He's distanced himself from
Yes, him. Yeah, but they split pretty forcefully when Vince was indicted. And Jim says, and I believe him, that he hasn't talked to Vince in 7 years. So I guess you could put that as he was a mentor to him, but they eventually split, and I don't think that they're together at all. And I don't think that, as a matter of fact, I think Vince went on Facebook before the election and said, "I'm not going to vote for Kenny because he's in the pocket of Daugherty," and he has a great dislike for John Daugherty.
Speaking of John Daugherty, let's take a quick look at his brother, Kevin Daugherty. Again, one of the big winners last night in terms of an election. The state Supreme Court, there were three openings. Kevin Daugherty is a Democrat. His campaign received $1.5 million, almost a third of which came from chapters of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Well, if you can't help your own, who can?
Electing justices versus appointing justices. What are your thoughts, Tom?
Well, I'm conflicted because I always keep running into reality. In an ideal world, we would have a political appointment of judges, which is what we have at the federal level. Let's be honest.
Sure.
They have to be confirmed by the Senate. They have to be. I mean, politicians get those positions or those favored by politicians. On the other hand, when we elect them, I mean, did you vote yesterday? Did you see that there were 43 candidates running for common police court? Did you know any of them? You know, I mean, it's just ludicrous, I think, to a certain degree.
How does a voter even begin to approach that?
Well, it's if they want to do a little homework, they could just go on the bar site, the Bar Association site, look at who they recommended, listen to friends, and pick one or two. I don't think you need to pick all 12, just find one or two. There were people recommended and not recommended by the bar. You know, at every level, if I'm going to get my car fixed, I'm not going to go to a lawyer and ask him to fix it. But if I wanted someone to judge a lawyer who's running for judge, other lawyers are a pretty good vouch. Hmm.
Katie Culinary, your thoughts on election versus appointment regarding judges?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you raised a couple of interesting points. I mean, you know, speaking for myself, I had many friends who came to me before this or came, you know, to me after voting yesterday and said, I know who I voted for mayor, maybe city council, but then all of a sudden I saw all those names. What gives? And, you know, even just trying to cover that here at WHYY was a challenge because, you know, as you mentioned, Tom, there were just dozens of candidates. How do you wrap your arms around these things so that people, you know, really understand, you know, who it is that they are electing? And perhaps in some ways it might be, you know, better to have, you know, at least politicians who we hope are being who we've elected, who we hope are being thoughtful about this to, you know, make appointments that they think are right. But, you know, in an ideal world, it would be great for the people to have some well-informed power. The problem is informed are they?
It's really hard to follow the money trail sometimes, isn't it, with the super PACs, Damon Williams?
Certainly. That was a major issue of the campaign. From the candidates that ran low figure campaigns, the Streets and the Olivers, even the mid range like the Abrahams complained of the money influx coming in from the PACs and super PACs, while the Williams and the Kennys of the world were a little bit less concerned about that. They both said that they're playing within the rules, and no one has accused them of any illegal campaign fund activity. outside of the fouling that Williams had earlier. But so they're playing inside the rules, but they all want campaign reform, finance reform with that. But we'll see about that. They've taken the money, and no one has brought them up on charges.
We have a tweet from Walt, and we're going to get back into the schools issue here. Why can't everyone state the obvious? People do not support vouchers by 70% and voted against Williams over that issue.
Well, that's not true. That's why.
Okay. Elaborate, Tom Ferrick.
Vouchers was a red herring. I guess that's the phrase. We have vouchers in Pennsylvania or something very like it. But instead of giving the check from the state treasury to the parent, we have something called the EITC program, where businesses get tax breaks if they give it to approved organizations who in turn give out scholarships. And the EITC and OSCT, these are all these confusing state initials, gave out $150 million last year in these kinds of scholarships. So everyone was talking about vouchers. Vouchers are not on the agenda in Harrisburg. There are no bills to put vouchers in because the politicians feel they have addressed this issue. That's the real issue. And it's already enacted, and it's been around for about 8-9 years.
Okay. I'd like to take a quick look at Philadelphia's poverty rate, just under 26.5% in 2013. Deep poverty, live in deep poverty in this city, higher than any other large city in this country. So how does Jim Kenney, if he does end up mayor November 4th, he's elected mayor November 3rd, mm-hmm. How does he move forward on this issue? Any thoughts? Damon Williams, how do you even begin to tackle that?
He talked in broad terms of tying economic development to increases in education. And that's a safe route to go. If you increased education even through the pre-K programs all the way up through enhanced STEM curriculum in high school, that, he says, will spur those individuals to get better paying jobs, and that will lead to an increased economy. That is several years, if not generations, away. The talk that we're more interested in is how are we going to have next jobs in March? And I haven't heard a distinct plan. Maybe you have, but I haven't heard a distinct plan from Kenny how to immediately create jobs now.
Katie or Tom?
Kenny, not much you can do. There's not much you can do when you're mayor.
Right.
And you have to do around the edges. One of them is education. One of them is more work for people. And that the way that relates to the government is through tax policy. And I don't think it's any secret that our business tax policy is onerous and hurts us in trying to get business to come into the city. But to cut those taxes without anything to replace them means that we lower the services that we deliver to people who need them the most. Right. So it's a real difficult pull for a mayor to move that needle, I guess. Now, I think in fairness to Mayor Nutter, with Eva Gladstein, he has put together a group that is very difficult to figure out what they do, but I think it's basically designed to make sure that the resources the city does spend are not duplicated or not spent well. And I have great hope that they'll be able to do that, make it more efficient and deliberate.
All right, very quickly, grading Mayor Nutter. Which grade would you give him? Okay, we're not even going to go. We don't have time to even get into that right now. We are running short of time. Tom Ferrick has been writing for Philly.com's Next Mayor Project. Tom, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Damon C. Williams, pleasure, political reporter for the Philadelphia Tribune.
My pleasure.
And Katie Colinari of WHYY. Always great to talk to you.
Thanks
so
Mary.
Much. Don't forget to visit our Facebook page and check out our podcasts. Just head to our homepage, whyy.org/radiotimes. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain. Hour 2 is coming right up.